Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. It's March 20th, 2019. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here on my own, flying solo because Ron's flying to the sun. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. That's radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. So happy spring. The equinox happens, I believe it's at 5:58 p.m. around here this evening. So that's very exciting. You're in the last few hours of winter, so that's nice. So if you're in the winter of your discontent, I invite you to be contented because it's actually a beautiful day, and I think we're going to get up over 50 degrees around here, which is kind of nice. So anyway, so I just wanted to warn you too that I checked the pollen count, and surprise, surprise, even though we're probably not going to see leaves until May, we are going to see pollen yesterday and today. And so there are some trees, cedars and junipers and some other things that are shooting out pollen. So it's really interesting. Even before you see the leaves on the trees, the trees start to bud. And I live near Bassett's Bridge Road. So when I'm driving on Bassett's Bridge Road going towards 195, there's a ridge that rises up in front of me. And I can see lots of trees along that ridge. So I'm very struck by the view of that ridge. And I can sort of tell what's going on seasonally by looking at the ridge and seeing what the trees are doing. So right now, usually in the winter, that ridge looks the trees look very gray, you know, that sort of brownish grayish color. And right now they're ever so slightly colored. As the season advances, before the leaves start popping, they get this little tinge of red and orange. So right now they have this very slight tinge of that red and orange. And when you see that, you know, there's pollen coming out because the trees are starting to bud. And so if you're like, oh my goodness, sneeze, 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 guess what? There's some allergens out there. So you can break out that neti pot, consider drinking that nettle tea and eyebright, consider that vitamin C and quercetin and stuff like that, and hit some local honey, and that might help you with some of your allergy symptoms. And for goodness sake, clean out your nose, because that's how the pollen gets in. Clean out your nose and gargle, because you're breathing the pollen in, and if you literally clean out the nose, you're pulling the pollen out. And also if you gargle, because you breathe in through your throat. Well, you breathe in through your nose, and then it gets into your throat, and you also breathe in through your mouth, and it gets in that way too. So gargling is a good thing. Get rid of that pollen. All right. So that, I just wanted to remind you of all that stuff and invite you to welcome the spring and enjoy the equinox. The other thing that's cool is tonight is Purim. Yay, Purim. So I'm planning to go to Temple B'nai Israel and celebrate Purim. And for those of you who don't know what Purim is, it's a Jewish holiday. It's really fun. People think of Jewish holidays as being really sad and solemn, like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which are joyous in their own ways, but they're really the most solemn holidays of the year. And a lot of times that's what people celebrate. Pretty much every other holiday, well, not every other holiday, but most other holidays, let's say many other holidays, are lots of fun and very celebratory. Yes, you've got Tisha B'Av, which is about the destruction of the temple, and you've got Yom HaShoah, which is where you observe the remembrance of the Holocaust. But there's loads of super fun holidays. And among the super fun holidays is this one, Purim. And Purim, a pur is a lot. Not a lot of stuff, but a lot that you draw, like when you're drawing straws, it's like that. So anyway, what it's about is there was this Queen Esther, and she became the queen because King Ahasuerus got, this is in Persia, by the way, in ancient Persia, he got rid of this, of his queen, because she refused to dance naked in front of his, of all the people gathered. And so there's lots of feminist retellings of that, where Vashti's seen as a hero, Vashti the queen that he threw out. So he had no queen, so he had to go get one. And there's this whole story about how he had an advisor named Mordecai who actually saved him from a plot. And he wound up honoring Mordecai because he foiled this plot, kind of like, you know, Guy Fawkes Day. Anyway, so Mordecai had this beautiful niece that he was raising, and he said, you should really consider doing something for our people, the Jews. And so you should go and try out to be the queen. So she did, and she was gorgeous, and Ahasuerus fell for her the minute he saw her, and that was that. So we had Queen Esther, and there was this rotten guy, Haman, who was jealous of Mordecai and wanted to kill him, and Haman wanted to kill all the Jews. So Esther got wind of this, and she fasted and prayed, and then came before the king. And at a big old feast that she was having, and Haman thought that he was all cool because he was invited to the feast. But she called him out and she said, "Yo, Haman wants to kill me and all of my people. Well, this guy wants to kill me and all of my people." And Ahasuerus says, "Who wants to do this?" And she said, "Haman." So when you read the story of Esther, you make all kinds of noise and yell and shout, and you make these, you do these noisemakers called groggers, and it's super fun. And, you know, it's a celebration of Esther calling out Haman, and Haman being gotten rid of, him and his whole family. And then the Jews having a long time of prosperity in Persia is actually very nice in the end. And so the celebration is, it's a super fun celebration. When you go to synagogue, usually there can be a play or a pageant that's humorous and silly. It can involve the kids. And then you eat humantashen, and humantashen are Haman's hats. And they're supposedly, Haman wore a triangular shaped hat. And they're these delicious little pastries that are basically a cookie, that they're like a jam dot, but they're triangular. That's basically it. But the traditional humantashen has prune or moon, and moon is poppy seed paste. Those are the traditional ones. And people make humantashen with other flavors. They make, you know, they put other jam in them. They put, you know, raspberry and apricot. Those are other classic ones that you see made. And recently I've heard that people put in Nutella. So anyway, but the most traditional ones, and to me the most delicious ones, are prune and moon. And in fact, I wound up ordering some gluten-free humantashen because I didn't have time to make any. So, and they are raspberry and apricot. And I have some lekvar, which is prune butter, in my fridge. And I'm going to place some lekvar over the other jam so I can have my prune. And I'll find some poppy seeds and put those on top too. So anyway, so that's the story of Purim. So the other funny thing about Purim is not too far from Mardi Gras. Sometimes it happens around the same time as Mardi Gras. So in Israel and in some circles, Purim is celebrated just like Mardi Gras. It's around the same time of year, and it's a big drunk. You're supposed to get so drunk that you can't tell the difference between Haman and Mordecai. And people dress up in costume, and not necessarily the costumes of the characters in the story. You can dress up as Wonder Woman, which is what I'll probably do. And you know, God only knows what the rabbi's going to dress as. And, you know, one year he dressed as a cheerleader, which was pretty fun. And so really, you can dress as anything, and it's a big party, and people party and dance and drink, and it's a good time. So we go to Israel, like going to Purim in Israel is like going to Mardi Gras in New Orleans. It's basically, it's very similar. It's that kind of deal. And the reason that Purim is celebrated that way is, guess what? Mardi Gras. That's why. So I know Mardi Gras happened already. It was a couple of weeks ago. You know, this is when Purim is. And Purim is kind of late this year because 5779, that's the Jewish year, is a leap year. And the most of the months are short. They're much, like, you have many more 28-day months in the Hebrew calendar. So when you have a leap year, you don't add a day, you add a month. And so we are in Adar 2. So the month they add is Adar. And so Adar happens around now. It's like happens around February and March. And they add Adar 2 and they put Purim. So if it's not a leap year, Purim will be in Adar 1. And if it is a leap year, they put Purim in Adar 2. So that's why Purim is now. It's already March 20th. And then Passover is going to be late-ish. All the holidays get pushed later when you have after the leap month. So Passover is going to be at the end of April, and that pushes the high holidays later for the following year. For 5780, it'll be a little bit later into this, you know, late September, even into early October, and that'll push Hanukkah out to, you know, around Christmas. That's what tends to happen. So that year that Hanukkah, that I turned 50, and Hanukkah and Thanksgiving and my birthday all happened on the same day, the year before, which would have been 5772, was not a leap year, so that everything was early. That's how that works. So I thought that was interesting to you. So you're probably listening to me going, why are you talking about Jewish stuff? Can I hear something about natural stuff? Well, I did tell you about things to do with allergies. But anyway, what I'd like to do now is tell you about the pros and cons of hormone replacement therapy for menopause, which I had promised you 2 weeks ago. Last week, I wanted to do the review of thinking differently about opioids because of the wonderful panel that I did at Eastern Connecticut State University on March 6th. So I wanted to recap that. So this week, 2 weeks ago, I talked about natural help for menopause. And now I'd like to talk about, because I always talk about all the natural stuff and then I don't get around to talking about the hormone replacement therapy. So I wanted to finally get to that. All right. So what happens? So when you're in menopause, sometimes you don't feel good. In case you ladies didn't realize this, you don't feel good. And how don't you feel good? Well, what's going on is your estrogen is dropping. And when you have low estrogen, sometimes you don't feel good. And one of the things, so there's a lot of controversy about why you don't feel good. So there's different ways that you don't feel good. One of the ways you don't feel good is you get the hot flashes. So what's up with that? Well, when your estrogen drops, my understanding is that the hypothalamus is a master gland of the endocrine system. It even rules over the pituitary gland, which is another master gland of the endocrine system. So what happens there is this hypothalamus wants its estrogen. And if estrogen is not bonding to the hypothalamus, it gets confused about temperature. What temperature should I be? And your hypothalamus decides, well, I'm not getting my estrogen, so you must be hot. And so because you're hot, I'm going to make you sweat so you can cool off. And that kind of happens. The hypothalamus kind of gets confused. And over a number of years, that finally settles down. But that process is also controlled by other things that are going on. If you have more stress going on, if you get excited in any way, if anything increases your stress hormones, you're going to be more likely to have a hot flash overall and in the moment. The other thing that tends to make you have hot flashes is sleep, which is so great because you're more tired anyway because your estrogen and progesterone are going down and then you can't sleep. Good times. I think the reason that you get more hot flashes, the other thing that will give you more hot flashes acutely is if you're hot. If you get warm, you're more likely to have a hot flash. So if it's a warm room, you're more likely to be the one that's going to get overheated and sweat. And so I find that I have to sleep cooler, that even in the winter, I may have to wear, I'll have to wear short sleeve nighties to bed instead of my fuzzy pajamas. I had a woman say to me recently, we were talking about our respective menopauses, and she said to me, because she was a small woman, she wasn't overweight, she was relatively slender. And she said to me, in the evening when I'm hanging around the house, I put on my fuzzy pajamas just to hang around. But when I get into bed, I have to put on my light nightie or else I will sweat. So one of the things we talked about is the overhead fan for the bed. It's really important. It makes such a difference. And I don't have one yet. And I'm hoping in the next year or so we'll get one. But I would love to have an overhead fan because when I go stay at my mom's or my sister's, the bedrooms I stay in have an overhead fan and it helps so much. And, if you don't have an overhead fan, you can get a box fan and train it on you. But the overhead fan is so nice. I really recommend it. But so simply getting hot is going to make you sweat. You're going to be a little more heat sensitive. And anything that makes you hot that increases your circulation to your face, for example. So caffeine and alcohol and spicy food may bring on hot flashes. And then the other thing is sugar. And I think sugar has to do with the way it affects your adrenal hormones and your insulin. The more sweets you eat, the more hot flashes you tend to have. And I've had women say to me, oh, yeah, especially if I have dessert at night, if I have sweets before I go to bed, I'm going to get a hot flash that night. I'm going to get night sweats. So stress, caffeine, sugar, alcohol, sometimes spicy food, anything that makes you really warm is going to make you more likely to have hot flashes. So, um, So that's one of the things that happens. Another thing that happens is, of course, this is what I hear people complaining about. The number one thing is the hot flashes, because the hot flashes, they interrupt your day and they especially interrupt your night, and they're no fun. And depending on how severe you get them, you know, that can affect that can affect how your life is. Minor to moderate. I do have the issue of getting hot at night, but I deal with that by, you know, dressing a little cooler at night, and ultimately we'll get the ceiling fan. It's not too bad. It's not so bad that I can't get a decent night's sleep. If you don't exercise, you'll get more hot flashes too. And on the other side of that is, if you do exercise, you're going to have somewhat less, but not entirely less, because I'm exercising a lot and I still get them. So it doesn't work entirely. All right. So what do people do? So one of the things that sometimes happens is I see docs giving their patients chemical contraception, that they'll actually give them birth control pills. And the thing with birth control pills have synthetic estrogen and synthetic progesterone in it. They have an a synthetic estrogen, usually ethinyl estradiol, and I don't know if there's any other synthetic estrogen that's used in chemical contraception. The synthetic progesterones known as progestins, can vary. So you might have norgestimate, you might have levonorgestrel, you might have drospirenone, which is weird because you retain potassium and you have to watch how much potassium you eat. And you have norethindrone. Norethindrone was one of the first back in the, when I was taking birth control pills in the 80s, the Orthonovum was the big one, and that had ethinyl estradiol and norethindrone. And you can still get that. If you have an IUD, an intrauterine device, the IUD, usually has levonorgestrel in it. If you have a Mirena or if you have a Skylar, by the way, women, if you have an IUD, if you go to the doctor and the doctor says, what meds are you on? And you often think of the meds that you're taking, if you take meds regularly, that you're taking pills. But if you have an IUD placed and it is releasing progestin into you, you need to mention that to the doctor, because that's a drug that you're taking. It's releasing a drug into you. That's part of how it works. So please remember to say that. And I try to remember, sometimes I'll have women when I ask them what medications they're taking, one, they'll forget to tell me about their birth control because they don't think of it as a medication. It's birth control. And two, they'll forget about the IUD because you're not actually putting it in your mouth. So women, please remember to tell your docs if you're taking those things, so you have a full record of what medications you're on, because they make a difference in what's going on in your body. So sometimes women will be given chemical contraception, and it can work because it's mimicking estrogen, it's mimicking progesterone to an extent, and it will probably take away your hot flashes. Unfortunately, one of the things we say about chemical contraception, you know, at any age, it increases your risk of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, and cardiovascular disease. Those risks increase the older you get. So what sense does it make to use synthetic contraception to help with menopause? I don't think it makes a lot of sense. So the other thing that doctors give is synthetic estrogens. And this is not as common. A lot of times when I see women come in, they have not been given, like, their Premarin seems to be out of favor. One of the reasons Premarin is out of favor, what Premarin is, listen to the word, Premarin. It's a contraction of pregnant mare's urine. Ew, right? So what the deal was is my old company, I used to work for Aerst, which is the company that developed Premarin, and there is no more Aerst. It's now, Aerst got merged with Wyeth when I was there, in the 80s, they got merged with Wyeth, and then, so it was Wyeth Aerst for a while when I was there, and then I left, and they dropped the Aerst, and they became just Wyeth. The parent company was American Home Products, and then, ultimately, I can't remember what year this happened, because I was gone already. I was either in Oregon, I was gone already. Wyeth got taken over by Pfizer. Got subsumed by Pfizer, and I think they closed the New Jersey facility where I used to work. Anyway, two big drugs that came out of Aerst were Premarin and Inderol. So I like to joke that Premarin and Inderol paid for my naturopathic medical school. So kind of funny, right? So anyway, so Primarin, as I said, is pregnant mare's urine. So it does have, so there are three basic estrogens in your body, E1, E2, and E3, also known as estrone, estradiol, and estriol. Interestingly, the least potent of the three is estriol, and that's what's mostly in your body. So it's very smart because that way, because when you stimulate estrogen receptors, estrogen is a proliferative hormone. It causes growth. So we don't want overgrowth, because if you get overgrowth of estrogen-sensitive tissue, you can get cancer. So if you, so that's why most of the estrogen that's in your body is estriol. There are two more potent estrogens in your body, E1 and E2, that's estrone and estradiol. And you do want to have some of those around because you want to have that good stimulation of your estrogen receptors, but you want that moderated by your estriol. So anyway, when you take Premarin, Premarin comes from horses. What they do, this is how they get it, how they extract the Premarin from the pregnant mare's urine. They have a mare, a female horse, who's pregnant. It's really not nice. They have a female horse that's pregnant, and they water starve her a bit. They underhydrate her, so her urine is concentrated, and they collect her urine. So she's hooked up, she's catheterized, and they collect her urine, and then they extract the hormones from the horse. That's how it's made. And so when you get the estrogens from the horse urine, there's not just estradiol in it. There's a number of estrogens in it. There's equilin and equinolin. And the equa means, that's a Latin, or is it Greek? No, maybe it's a Greek root that means horse. And so there are horse estrogens in there. So the concern about taking Premarin is that you're ingesting hormones into your body doesn't recognize. And those estrogens still can stimulate your estrogen receptors, but your enzymes that break down your extra hormones don't recognize them. So they can't break them down. So they collect in your fat, and they can make you more likely to get cancer because they're just sitting there stimulating your estrogen receptors and they're not being broken down. So that's the downside of taking Premarin. And so back in 2002, there was the study, the Women's Health Initiative study, that was halted because, and it was a study on PremPro. So PremPro had Premarin in it, as well as Provera. Provera is medroxyprogesterone. It's a synthetic progesterone that doesn't act exactly the same way as natural progesterone in your body. So it will stimulate the receptors, but it bonds too much, and medroxyprogesterone is known to cause cancer. So I don't see people coming in on Premarin and Provera. I generally don't see it. Once in a while, I'll have a young woman come in and she's on the shot. So the shot is what we call Depo Provera, and what it is, it's a shot that goes into your tush. So it sits in the fat of your tush in a depot, and it gradually releases medroxyprogesterone over time. And because you don't have your natural progesterone bonding to the lining of your uterus, it causes contraception. So you'll see that once in a while, but you don't see it very much. I do not generally see women coming in having been prescribed Premarin by their docs. I mean, I guess it happens sometimes, and part of it may be that the population that I see is interested in natural medicine, so they're trying not to take the stuff at all. And part of it is when I do see people prescribed hormones from their MD, it tends to be plain estradiol. And the estradiol is actually bioidentical. Bioidentical means it's the same hormone that's in your body. And the estradiol is not extracted from horses. It's extracted from soy or wild yam. So it's humane, but it's just estradiol. And so what you'll see, unfortunately, is people being given just estradiol. So what did I just say? That estradiol, E2, is one of the more potent of the three estrogens that are in your body. So if you're only being given estradiol and it's not being backed up by extra estriol, aren't you going to be exposing yourself to more risk of cancer? Well, I think you are. So the other thing is that when you're given estrogen, regardless of whether you have a uterus, you need to also be given progesterone. So one of the things that they saw back in the day when in the 60s, when they first started giving women just estrogen after menopause, they saw a rise in uterine cancer because that estrogen was going into the uterus and it was stimulating the endometrium and it was causing cancer. So they realized, hey, we have to give something anti-proliferative to slow down the forming of that cancer. So they started giving progesterone, but they weren't giving natural progesterone. They were giving that medroxyprogesterone. So in 2002, they were giving women Premarin and Provera, this Prempro, and they had to halt the study because women were getting all the side effects. They were getting too much cancer. They were getting too much cardiovascular disease. So they halted the study. So I think ultimately over time, Premarin fell out of favor. And so you don't even see it being offered by docs most of the time. I don't want to say 100% of the time because once in a while I'll see a woman come in and she'll have vaginal cream that's Premarin, which I don't think is wonderful. I don't think it's a good idea that if you're going to use. So this is the other thing that I see women coming in with. The top two things I see women come in for with their menopause is hot flashes, and the second one is vaginal dryness or vaginal discomfort or discomfort during intercourse or sex play, I should say. And so that's what women want help with. I don't see people complaining about the vaginal dryness as much because women may not have a partner or their partner, they have issues with their partner around sex and sexuality. And it's not just that the man doesn't necessarily want to have sex. At that age, you'll see a lot of men, guys, who have either, they have erectile dysfunction for various reasons, it could be that they're obese or it could be that they're on medications that are affecting their erectile function. So if you're on blood pressure medications, for example, that can affect your erectile function. And a lot of men are on meds that affect that. And even a man who's under a lot of stress is going to have a lower sex drive. Not all the time, but a lot of times they are. And a man who isn't eating right and getting exercise is going to have some cardiovascular function. So by the way, guys, one of the first signs of cardiovascular disease is erectile dysfunction. So if you're not on any meds and you're starting to have erectile dysfunction, you're probably having the beginnings of cardiovascular disease. What do you do about it? Eat good and get exercise. Get cardio exercise, and it'll help clean that up. Really, if all you did was stop eating too much starch and sugar and beer and got regular exercise, that helps your erectile function because it'll clean out your arteries. Simple as that. Okay, so now if you're wondering if you should take natural hormone replacement therapy, the answer is controversial. I've seen places where people are saying that hormones, regardless of what they are, cause an increase in the rate of cancer. However, I saw a nice study because I wanted to see if there was, because one of the things we like to do as naturopathic physicians, if people are going to take hormones, we prefer for you to take bioidentical hormones. Again, a bioidentical hormone is a hormone that's exactly the same hormone that's in your body. So we're not doing Premarin that has equilin and equinolin, which are not found in your body unless you ingest them. We're giving you things that are the same as what's in your body. And they can be extracted from animals, but more often they're extracted from soy and wild yam. It's very easy to get soy. It's somewhat less easy to get wild yam, but soy is a subsidized crop in the U.S., so it's very easy to come by soybeans. Do they need to be organic? I don't know. I mean, the thing is, if it's extracted pure estrogen, probably doesn't matter. So there was a European study that shows only hormone replacement therapy increases breast cancer risk by 29%. Estrogen only hormone replacement therapy. That is, if you give a woman only estrogen, regardless of what kind it is, whether it's, your Premarin or your estradiol or whatever, if you only give estrogen, you don't give progesterone, it increases your breast cancer risk by 29%. If you give estrogen and progestin, that is a fake progesterone like medroxyprogesterone, all right? It increases your breast cancer risk by, wait for it, 69%. So somebody gives you Prempro, my advice to you is say no. All right. You don't want to be taking fake progesterone. It's worse to take estrogen and fake progesterone. That's your progestin, medroxyprogesterone, drospirenone, even your chemical contraception progestins. It's worse to take estrogen plus a fake progesterone than it is to take estrogen by itself. I'll say it one more time. If you're going to take hormone replacement therapy, better to take estrogen only than to take estrogen plus a fake progesterone. All right, wait for this. This is the big one. If you take estrogen with natural progesterone, that is bioidentical progesterone, in this study, it showed no increased risk of breast cancer. I'll say it again. If you take estrogen replacement therapy, and so when they did the estrogen replacement, presumably this is not necessarily like when we naturopaths give you your estrogen replacement therapy, we want you to have some estradiol as well as estriol with it to back it up, so you're not getting too much estradiol, right? Presumably, these, because it was just, you know, it's Britain's and they're doing, you know, just what the National Health is doing, it was probably just estradiol and natural progesterone. No increased risk. So more recent studies, so there's no increased risk. But more women are more likely to be given plain estradiol and not Premarin. So I'll say it again. I always recommend that if you're going to take estrogen, you should also take natural bioidentical progesterone. So there you go. There you have it. So there might be an exception to this rule. So one of the things that we see, as I said, women get, when you are in menopause, you get some atrophy of your vulvar tissue and your vaginal tissue, and sex can be painful. And some women, their vulva and vagina is so uncomfortable that it hurts when they walk. Other women, they have no problem in a day-to-day way, but when they go to have intercourse, it hurts. And it's surprising. It can hurt. And it can, even if it doesn't hurt in a day-to-day way, once you have the intercourse, what I hear women reporting is that it's painful, and also that it feels like scraping. There's a sandpaper sensation, even though, you know, if you examine them, they don't feel like sandpaper, but that's the sensation that they talk about. And what's going on there is you are getting extra friction because you're not making as much lubrication, and the tissues are atrophying, and You know, you're also not as elastic as you used to be. So your vagina is not as able to stretch. So when a woman comes in with vaginal dryness or a difficulty with having intercourse, I'll try to help her first with non-hormonal solutions. And the first non-hormonal solution I use is vitamin E oil. You can use vitamin E oil. And I'll encourage women to use lube, that you use lube early and often. Sue Johansson, who's the Canadian Dr. Ruth, very unabashed older woman nurse who used to do this great show both on the radio and on TV, just helping. It was a call-in show about sex, just like Dr. Ruth, except she wasn't this humorous little woman from Eastern Europe. And Dr. Ruth is amazing as well. I mean, you should listen to, you might want to check out both of them. So Dr. Ruth Westheimer, I think she still does a show somewhere. And then Sue Johansson, I think retired, but you can find shows by Sue Johansson. You can find her online. And, she's very graphic. You know, if you have a curiosity about a certain sex toy or a certain sex issue, she's completely unabashed. She'll pull it out. She'll show you. She'll explain it to you. One of the big things I learned from Sue Johansson is if you're going to have anal sex, you use a thicker lube. There are special lubes that are just for anal sex. So make sure if you're going to do that, that you get the thicker lube, because the tissues are more delicate and you need to have more slides. So you need to get a special thick lube that's intended for anal sex. Okay, so good. Anyway, if you just want to have intercourse and use your vagina for intercourse, you want it to be comfortable. So use the lube early and often. Now, remember, some people think that coconut oil is a great thing. And coconut oil is nice, frankly, because it works. It has staying power. It's oily and it smells good and it tastes good. If you if you're into coconut. Some people don't like the smell and taste of coconut, but if you like coconut, it definitely smells and tastes good. So it's a nice one to use. But there's an interesting issue with coconut. One of the wonderful things about coconut oil is that it is antimicrobial. We use coconut oil and extracts of coconut to fight viruses, bacteria, and fungus. So guess what? You add coconut oil to the vulvar environment and it can kill your good vaginal flora, because there's wonderful bacteria that live in your vagina that keep things healthy, that keep you at an acidic pH, so that it's going to keep you away from having yeast infections. So if you use coconut oil, you can kill the good bacteria. So it's not entirely recommended to use coconut oil. A better solution is aloe. So aloe is lovely. What do you use aloe for? You put aloe on burns. So it's very healing and soothing, and it's not as disruptive to the gut, to the vaginal flora. So you can use straight up aloe gel. You can also get lube where the primary ingredient is aloe. You can also take aloe if you have an aloe plant and you want to take a bit from, you know, break open a leaf and use the inside of the leaf from the aloe plant. You can do that as well. The thing is, if you use an aloe gel that's meant for the vulva, it's going to have some mold inhibitors, which the mold inhibitors are probably not too bad, but that you're going to be assured that there's going to be no mold in your aloe. So you can try using just aloe gel that's meant for your skin and try using that on your vulva and just make sure it doesn't have any coloring or scent in it, that it's pure aloe gel, preferably organic, and get it from the health food store and it's nice and clear. And you can use that and it can help your vulva. And you, like I said, there's a company that makes an all-natural lube and the main ingredient in it is aloe. So it's a great thing to use. And it's not hormonal. And if that works for you, I would stop there because aloe can promote healing. So if I have women who come in and they try to use vitamin E and they try to use aloe and they're still in pain and they're still having difficulty with intercourse. And so to those women, I may move along and say, all right, we're going to try to help you use bioidentical hormones. Mind you, right now I have an herbalist I have a wonderful herbalist, Sue Coombs, who she has a company called To Be Well. And I ask her to create salves and creams for my practice. And I recently asked her to create a non-hormonal salve or cream to help with vulvar comfort, to help with menopausal vulvar irritation. And it's going to be all herbal. And there was a company, Earth's Botanical Harvest, who used to make something like that, but I haven't seen it. I think they stopped that company is no more. So I want to see if this local company can do this for me. So if that happens, I'll let you know. And, you know, there's going to be some neat phytoestrogenic herbs in it, and we'll see what happens. Probably dong quai, probably wild yam, and a bunch of other things. And it'll be all natural. So we'll see how that goes. So if I had that available, I would try that. But not having that available, the next step you do is you go to using topical estradiol or estriol. So I was at a conference a couple years ago, and my teacher, the premier naturopath, probably the premier naturopathic gynecologist in the world, is Tori Hudson, and she was my professor at the National University of Natural Medicine. And anyway, so she was lecturing to us and somebody asked her about the use of vulvar estradiol versus estriol. And is it safe to use in women who have breast cancer? She said that in Europe, they're not nearly as afraid of bioidentical hormones after cancer. And that she felt that if you are given topical plain estradiol vaginally, that there's a short enough half-life that it's unlikely to give you cancer. But my preference is if you use estriol, the cool thing about estriol is estriol has a much shorter half-life and it's almost never going to give you cancer. Like you can use it and be, I don't want to say 100%, but you know, 90%+ confident that you're not going to get cancer from using the estriol because it works very locally. It has a short half-life. And so it's not going to get into your general circulation. So topical estriol for vaginal comfort is a great idea. And you can get creams, and you can get bioidentical creams made, prescribed to you from a natural pharmacy. And you can also get them. Estriol is actually over the counter, and small amounts of estradiol and progesterone can be over the counter. Below a certain strength, you can get estriol, estradiol, and progesterone over the counter. So if you talk to your friendly local naturopathic physician, we have those things available to you. And we have companies that make suppositories. We have this nice company that makes little ovals that have estriol or DHEA, or estriol with DHEA. So what's DHEA? So DHEA is this neat hormone. It's made by your adrenal glands. It does tend to decline as we get older. And DHEA stands for dihydroepiandrosterone. And it's made by the adrenal glands, and it does help your sex drive. It helps your energy. It helps your blood sugar regulation. And a young woman is going to have a DHEA somewhere in the 200s. Someone my age, if you're in menopause, it could be double digits. We tend to feel better if we're higher than double digits. DHEA can also be transformed into anything. It can be transformed into testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. There is some concern because if it can be converted into whatever your body's looking for, it can increase your risk of cancer. That's why it's a good idea. If you're going to use any proliferative hormone, you should also be using natural progesterone. And so there's some concern that there is an increased breast cancer risk in postmenopausal obese women who take DHEA. So if you're needing DHEA and you're pretty overweight, you can take the DHEA if you take progesterone with it. You want to take natural progesterone with it, and that'll bring your cancer risk down. All right. So if you do topical estriol or estradiol, you can get suppositories. You can also get creams. And the way it tends to work is you'll use the cream for a while. You might use the cream for a full week, and then you may find that you don't need to use it every day, that your vulva will transform. Your tissues will regrow, they'll regenerate, and you'll have lubrication making cells again, and you'll feel a lot better. And you might find that intercourse improves for you. So that's a good way to go. So if possible, I recommend estriol over estradiol because it works. And even though you're probably not going to come to harm from the estradiol, there is a slightly higher chance of coming to harm with the estradiol because it does have a longer half-life, and the estriol is so local and has such a short half-life that there's almost no risk of getting cancer from it. So if you're going to get bioidentical hormones, one way to do it is to go to your friendly local naturopathic physician and get the over-the-counter stuff. Sometimes the over-the-counter stuff is all you need. We can offer you natural progesterone. We can offer some levels of estrogen and estradiol. But if you need to dial in specific amounts, then you may want to go to a prescribing doc. And of course, in the state of Connecticut, naturopathic physicians cannot prescribe at this time. And so you can go to a doc who is sympathetic to prescribing bioidentical hormones. And there are a number around who will do that for you. And they can put together a cocktail for you that can make you feel better. One of the things you do is a responsible doc is going to go ahead and do blood tests, or they might do salivary tests. Whether you do the salivary test versus the blood test, whichever one you do, you want to be consistent and keep doing that one and use that as your benchmark. Use that as your benchmark to decide what bioidentical hormone you're going to use. So keep using the same one over time. Generally, the salivary hormones tests, they don't test FSH and LH. So FSH and LH, FSH stands for follicle stimulating hormone, and it is the hormone that comes from your pituitary gland and causes your ovaries to make follicles, which will ultimately break into an ovum, an egg, and a corpus luteum. And corpus luteum is the yellow body that stays in your ovary and makes progesterone for you and tells all the other follicles, nope, no cigar, you're not going to ovulate now. We only want this woman to have one baby. And then LH is luteinizing hormone that stimulates the winning egg to turn into an ovum and to undergo meiosis and become an ovum, Anacorpus luteum. So first you have FSH, which causes the follicles to develop, a whole bunch of them, and then LH causes the winning follicle, the one that grows up the fastest, to actually do the act of ovulation. So when you're in menopause, those two hormones tend to rise, and they tend to rise into the double or even triple digits, in the double digits the triple digits. And when you see FSH and LH that high, even if a woman is still getting periods, they're in menopause. And, somebody like me, if you are a menopausal woman, a woman who's in menopause and who's not taking hormones, or like me, you're not taking hormones consistently, they're going to have a high FSH and LH. A woman who's taking bioidentical hormones regularly is going to have a lower FSH and LH. I had a woman come to me who was in her late 50s and who was doing bioidentical hormones to the point that she was actually still getting periods, which I thought was interesting. And I was thinking, so at 58 years old, should you still be menstruating? I don't know. But she was unwilling to give up her bioidentical hormones because they made her feel young and they made her feel good and they helped her with her sex drive. I will say that it is possible to not have a cycle and to use little to no hormone. It is possible to use no hormone and still have a sex drive. In fact, there have been studies where they talk about one of the biggest populations that have an increase in STDs is the elderly population. It's because, they're not necessarily protecting themselves because, of course, there's not a fear of pregnancy. So they're passing STDs around. So definitely you can have a sex drive at any age. And you can have good sexual function and not use anything. So when you're considering whether you're going to use bioidentical hormones, I want to point out that you do not have to use bioidentical hormones. If you feel happy and healthy with what's going on, and even if you have mild hot flashes that you feel like you're controlling with, sometimes I rest, sometimes I stay away from my alcohol, sometimes I don't do the spicy foods, and you're managing it and you feel fine, you don't have to take hormones. You're not going to be, you're not increasing your risk of stuff your risk of course, of cardiovascular disease does get higher when you're in menopause. And part of that is because of the withdrawal of the hormones, because everything is less elastic, including your blood vessels. But you can manage that by eating a really good diet, by reducing your inflammation, by getting regular exercise. If you eat proanthocyanidins and a lot of fruits and vegetables with good antioxidants in them, you're going to be more likely to have healthy blood vessels. If you get regular cardiovascular exercise, you have a move it or lose it phenomenon. If you work out, you're going to have stronger muscles and you're going to have stronger blood vessels, and your heart's going to work better and all of your blood vessels are going to work better. So you don't necessarily need any sort of hormone to manage your health after menopause. The reason you would take bioidentical hormones is because you're really not feeling good. You've got something that's going on that you can't. And personally, I don't think fat loss is a good primary reason to do bioidentical hormones. The bioidentical hormones are something you should use because you've tried other things for your sex drive, for your vulvar comfort, for your sleep, and for your hot flashes, and they haven't worked. That would be a reason to do it. I don't think weight loss is a good reason to do it, because you can manage weight without taking hormones. I mean, you have to do it. You have to manage your diet, and you have to figure out the right diet and exercise plan for you. But I don't think weight loss as a primary reason is a good thing. Having said that, if you are on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, it might help you manage your weight better, because it will improve. Everything just works better that way, and metabolism-wise. Estrogen and progesterone push hormone-sensitive lipase, which is a hormone, which is an enzyme that breaks down fat for you. And if you have less hormone-sensitive lipase, it's harder to lose weight. So if you have more estrogen and progesterone on board, you might have an easier time losing weight. Having said that, you have a lot of menopausal women who don't take hormones who are at a healthy weight. There is the menopause 10. Your body tends to want you to gain about 10 pounds around the time of menopause because guess what? You're not making as much estrogen because your ovaries are not going through the ovulatory process and they're not kicking out estrogen for you. And guess what makes estrogen? Your body fat. So a person with more fat is going to make more estrogen. And there are some studies that suggest that there's a higher risk of cancer, of reproductive cancers, if you have if you're overweight, if you have more body fat. And guess who else gets high estrogen if they're overweight? Men. And men, what do you think that does to your sex drive? If you've got estrogen competing, because you're going to make more estrogen. If you measure the estrogen of a man, of an overweight or obese man, he's going to have enough estrogen to thwart his male hormone function. So if you find that you're overweight or obese and you're a man and your sex drive is down, it could be because you have too much estrogen from your body fat. So that is definitely a thing. So just be aware of that. And I've seen men improve their sex drive and hormonal function simply by exercising. And I even had a case where a guy went to the gym once and where he was having low sex drive and low function. He went to the gym once and lifted weights and did some cardio and he was raring to go right after the workout. It's really amazing. By the way, people, if one easy way to increase your sex drive, I probably said this 2 weeks ago, is go to the gym. Really, lift some weights. You don't have to go to the gym. You could go stack wood if you want to. It doesn't matter. But you can carry, you can do any kind of weightlifting, and it can be lifting. I pick things up and put them down. It can be, you know, just your dumbbells and barbells and stuff, or your bands and your, or you could do body weight exercises like burpees or push-ups. And you can also, you know, move wood, move furniture. And if you want to have a fun evening, take your honey and go lift some weights and move some wood or whatever you're going to do in the afternoon, you know, and it will increase your testosterone immediately. By the way, when you do bioidentical hormones, even for women, you can measure their testosterone and give them testosterone. And what we like to do with testosterone, the way I like to handle testosterone is to apply it to the vulva. And the reason to do that is because you can do a much lower dose. You get it right where you want it, and it definitely helps with sex drive. So it can be really nice. I mean, I don't know that it will work in everyone, but it definitely works for some. And if you don't use it, and you don't necessarily have to use it every day, but it will increase your testosterone levels. And if you have higher testosterone levels, you will be more interested in sex, I promise you. So whether you increase your testosterone by lifting weights or by doing, by the way, you don't necessarily have to lift weights. You can also do high intensity interval training cardio. So if you, you know, even just going for a walk, warming up, walking as fast as you can, then slowing down until you recover and doing that a bunch of times and then recovering at the end, that can increase both growth hormone and testosterone. When you increase growth hormone, guess what? You get more muscle mass and you get more, when you have more muscle mass makes testosterone for you. So when you're sitting around doing nothing, if you have more muscle mass, you will have more testosterone on board and a better sex drive. All right. So what's the lowdown? If you're interested, if you tried natural medicine and for hot flashes, for sex drive, for sleep, and for vaginal comfort, and they haven't worked, and you're interested in bioidentical hormones, you can see your friendly local naturopathic physician. We can test you whether by saliva or by blood to see where your hormone level, and also urine. You can also do urine testing. Those three substances will give you, but just be consistent, whichever one you do. We can test to see where you're at, and then we can offer you bioidentical hormones. We can't offer you testosterone. We can offer you DHEA. DHEA is over-the-counter, can help your sex drive. We can offer you some levels of bioidentical hormones, whether vulvar form. Vulvar, we can offer you estriol and DHEA. And then orally, we can offer, orally and in creams, transdermal creams, we can offer you some small amounts of estradiol, we can offer you estriol, and we can offer you progesterone. If you want to dial it in precisely and get a compounding pharmacy to make very precisely dialed in amounts for you, then the thing to do is to get a prescribing doc, a doctor who's willing to prescribe bioidentical hormones, and knows what they're doing, and they'll prescribe them for you. And so the bottom line with, as my understanding, is that if you do natural hormone replacement therapy and you use estrogen plus natural progesterone, not synthetic progesterone, there's no increased risk of breast cancer. And you can extrapolate to endometrial cancer, the cancer of the uterine lining, as well as cancer of the ovaries. All right. So there you go. So very interesting stuff. I hope that was helpful for you. Of course, you could be listening to this on podcast, and it will be available on podcast. Or if you're listening to one podcast, it is. So I'm going to go now. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, call and talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. And you can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions and comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.